Welcome back, ladies and gents. The Hip Hop Sports Report podcast is in full effect. I'm your host, Jay Hicks, here behind the mic. Going to be doing a little bit of basketball talk this evening. Maybe a little hip hop talk. We'll kind of see where the evening takes us. It's been a couple of weeks since we've been on. I've had a lot of things going on lately. Been doing a lot of ripping and running. Went back to my hometown. Kind of came back to where I'm at now, where my destination is now. Just trying to get settled, you know what I'm saying? So, and then I also did some writing on the website. And I know you already saw that because I know you guys are hitting up the website on a daily basis, hiphopsportsreport.com. That is the website. Please check us out. Have about a few new stories up of late. We had one most recently talking a little bit about Brandon Marshall, the Chicago Bears wide receiver, doing some great things in the community, dealing with some of his own personal issues, and then trying to take that, his message regarding his own struggles with his mental health issues, and trying to take that and turn it into a positive within the community. I think that's fantastic. So check out that article right there. We always try to do a little bit about people giving back in the community, specifically with, you know, with regards to our black athletes and rappers. And not to say that, you know, we turn a blind eye at what other people are doing in the community, but personally, I've always just felt that a lot of times our people get a bad rap, and you know, we tend to focus on the negative, and we tend to leave out the positive, and I don't know why that is. And if we don't leave out the positive, maybe we're not celebrating it enough. And so I think that what Brandon Marshall is doing is fantastic, and I think that it needs to be commended. And so I felt like that story needed to be told. And many of you have already heard that story. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? But I figured I would highlight it anyway. So we got that going. We talked a little bit about hip-hop in 2014. Kind of slacking a little bit. I'm not even going front. It's fell off a little bit since 2013. I don't know why that is. I mean, I think really it has more to do with, above anything else, I think it has to do with just the amount of production we saw in 2013. But you know, we have a whole article on that, and maybe we'll touch on that if we have time later on in the show tonight. But please check out that article. And then also we talked a little bit about the NBA Finals, and we did our finals prediction on the site as well. So please, by all means, check out all of that stuff on hiphopsportsreport.com. And please, if you are so inclined, go to iTunes, look us up, search hiphopsportsreport.com, or hiphopsportsreport, period. I think it should just come up. If you do a search there on iTunes, you should be able to find us with no problem. And once you click on the podcast, go ahead and click subscribe so you can hear even more of the podcast. And we would all appreciate that here. And I've appreciated anybody that's been subscribing to this point, or anybody that's been listening to the podcast. It seems like every couple of weeks I talk about the podcast and I hear some other people come and tell me like, oh, I've been listening to it, or oh, I heard a few shows, and it kind of catches me off guard because like I wasn't really expecting you to say that. But I really do greatly appreciate it though, nonetheless. Anybody that's checking out the show, man, and anybody that's supporting our cause and our movement, I'm riding right with you. You know what I'm saying? So you good in my book, and I appreciate that. And I think tonight we're gonna be talking basketball, of course, because that's what's hot right now. And we may have a guest on this evening. I have yet to confirm a guest. We're recording this on Wednesday, the 11th, but it's about 6 o'clock in the evening right now where I'm at. It's about 6:45 in the evening where I'm at. But we'll see if we can get a guest on the line for tonight's show. If not, you know, I'll just run it solo. You know, I'm just in the cockpit chilling by myself right now, and that's all right. Yeah, man, NBA Finals. I think we'll start there on the preseason podcast of the year. There was a game last night. The San Antonio Spurs went down to South Beach and played the Miami Heat.
And there was much defecation.
Yeah, there was quite a bit of defecation on the Miami Heat by the San Antonio Spurs, y'all. Man, what a half. I was sitting in here. I was making dinner as I was watching the game. I'm sitting up in here frying fish, y'all, watching the game. And the Spurs was hotter than fish grease last night. I mean, they shot 90%. They were like halfway through the second quarter, they were shooting over 90% for the game. And I think it was maybe halfway. No, it was at halftime they were shooting, I think, 75.8%, which I believe was an NBA Finals record to that point. you can't say enough about the Spurs offense, man. And one thing that I kind of felt like I had to take away from that game was I've maintained all year long, and if you've listened to me or followed the site, I've maintained all along that the Miami Heat's fastball, so to speak, nobody can catch up to their fastball. So, and what I mean by that is the Heat's A game is better than every other team's A game in the league. And that's kind of what I've always believed, that when they get rolling, they're not going to be stopped, and their best game is better than your best game, essentially. And I don't know if that's any longer the case. I don't think I can say that with a straight face anymore, man. Spurs didn't miss, y'all. Like, what do you want me to say? They did not miss a shot in the first half, basically. Like, and for those of you who are, like, basketball novice, and maybe you're just checking out the podcast to be nice or whatever, I don't really know, or just perusing it just to, you know, if you're just checking it out for the first time and don't really know a lot about hoop, a good first half, like, if you shot 50%, you're doing well. If you shot 50% as a team, you're doing good. If you shot above 50%, you're doing good. If you're in the mid-40s, that's basically average. They shot 70 and 75%, y'all, in a half. That's 24 minutes of basketball, and they shot 75%. Never been done before in the NBA Finals. And a lot of that has to do with the Heat's defense. I don't think they're... I think they maybe were relying a little bit too much on the home crowd, which is kind of insane when you think about it, because their fans are garbage, and their fans got ripped to shreds on Twitter late in that game when they were flying out of the arena once again, trying to get out and not see any more of the massacre that was going on the court, and being the garbage fans that they are down there in Miami, they couldn't wait to get out of that arena and try to beat the traffic, I guess, or whatever. But clearly they hadn't learned anything from last year's game when fans had left early and Miami came back down 5 with 30 seconds left in game 6 against the Spurs, tied the game, forced overtime, fans is banging on the glass stuff trying to get, let us in, let us in. No, they didn't get, nobody let them in, you know what I'm saying? And they didn't deserve it. But clearly these fans didn't learn their lesson. But, I mean, I guess I can't kill them too much because they did, in fact, lose this game going away. So, you know, that happened. But I felt like the Heat, maybe they just came out flat, which is kind of, you don't expect a team to come out flat in the NBA Finals, especially it's the first home game in the Finals. I don't think Miami's lost a home game in these whole playoffs, and yet they still came out flat. And it's like, how is that possible? I don't really know why they would do that. Or maybe they were just relying on the natural energy of the crowd and you know, just to get them going or whatever. But no, San Antonio came right out the gate and took it to them. And you have to applaud that. You can't, you know, the championship's hanging in the balance. You have to go get it. Nobody's going to give anything to you at this point. And these are the two best teams in the league, make no mistake about it. So you got to go get it. And San Antonio, you heard Popovich in the huddle in game one. He said, they're the champs. They have what we want. We got to go get it. And so that's basically what it was in game three. And they just came out a lot more aggressive. Miami was sloppy with the basketball. I think LeBron had 7 turnovers, I believe, which is highly uncharacteristic for him. Wade had 5 turnovers, I believe, something like that. Just really wasn't a great game. And Mario Chalmers, remember like 2 years ago when when Russell Westbrook was playing for the Thunder in the finals, and after that one poor game he had or whatever, or he just took a bunch, he was jacking up a bunch of shots and then, you know, they weren't going down. And then like Magic Johnson and everybody else came out the woodwork and just was crushing this poor kid. Like, this is the worst point guard play we've ever seen in the NBA Finals. Well, if that's the worst point guard play ever in the NBA Finals to that point, I don't know what you would call this Mario Chalmers performance through 3 games so far. But he ain't helping none. Let's put it like that. He's been atrocious so far in the series. It was funny, though, because I did see Stephen A. Smith last night, and he was flying off the handle, crushing Mario Chalmers for his lackluster performance. And I mean, it's worth noting, so I'm noting it here on the podcast. But at the same time, it's not going to make or break the Heat's championship run. Mario Chalmers, it's just not. I mean, they need help from all their role players. And so far, they haven't really been that great. I mean, we've seen Ray Allen play well in spots. We've seen Rashard Lewis play well in spots. But even those guys, they're playing well because they're getting like 35 minutes a game. And you know, when you're out there for 35 minutes, and those guys are shooters, so I don't want to like totally discredit them. Lewis and Ray Allen are shooters. That's what they do. They shoot threes and they make them. But when you're out there for 35 minutes, you're bound to make a couple baskets. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, Ray Allen's going to get 9 points or 13 points, and Rashard Lewis is going to get 10, 12 points, something like that. But, I mean, aside from making a shot here or there, what are they really contributing to the effort? Yeah, I'm not really sure. They're not really known for their defense at this point. They don't rebound. They don't move the ball or anything like that. I mean, you might count on Ray Allen to get, you know, make a clutch play here or there, but if Rashard Lewis isn't making jumpers, then he's not helping you at all. He's got no business being on the court if he's not making his jumpers. And his jumper has been hot and cold in this series. Shane Battier he can't even see the floor consistently anymore. James Jones has been in and out of the lineup. Norris Cole's not really performing well. I mean, who through three games has been playing really well for Miami besides LeBron? Honestly, I mean, I don't even really know. And this goes back to our point for our article that we wrote at the start of the finals, which was that the Miami Heat were looking to do something here that had never been done, or at least had not been done in, by my count, 47 years in the NBA. And that was go to 4 straight championships and win 3 straight in the midst of going to 4 straight. Not many teams win 3 straight. Even fewer teams make it to 4 straight finals. And so to pull this off, I mean, it's almost unheard of. I don't think it's been done since the Celtics of the late 60s, I think, was the last time that this was done. So we're coming up on almost 50 years. And just knowing what we know about this Heat team, the way they just play down to their competition, the way that they refuse to rebound the basketball with any kind of ferocity on a consistent basis, the way that Chris Bosh just floats out there and shoots three-pointers all night long, the way that, I mean, Eric Spoelstra, who some people will credit him and call him a great coach, I ain't the one, you know what I'm saying? I think Eric Spoelstra stinks, personally. And I think Eric Spoelstra knows his team very well. And I can't say that he's done a terrible job with the Heat, because he's gone to 4 straight finals and he's won 3 of them, right? Or 2 of them so far. So, you know, it's not that he's done a horrible job, but I just, when I look at the adjustments that he makes, you know, people credit him for switching up his lineups. I just think he's closing his eyes and he's throwing darts at a dartboard, y'all. I don't really see any kind of method behind the madness like you see with Popovich. Popovich switches up his lineup, but it seems to be for very specific reasons. Spoelstra switches up his lineup and it's like, you know what I'm saying? We haven't given Shane Battier any run in a little while. We'll throw him out there. We haven't given James Jones any run in a little bit. We'll give him some tick. We'll give him 25 minutes tonight just because. And a lot of times it works out and people be like, wow, what a great maneuver by Eric Spoelstra. And it's like, well, was that really what it was? Or was it the fact that LeBron had 35, 10, and 9? Like, I mean, really. So, and that's what it comes back to, man. LeBron James is trying to win this championship seemingly on his own. And one thing that I remarked about on Twitter after the game last night was, you have the Miami Heat who they're down 2 games to 1 in the series, right? So they're still in it, you know. And I had the series going 7 games before the start, and you all saw that on the site. So I still think they'll bounce back. I think they'll win game 4 tomorrow night. And you'll probably hear this on Thursday more than likely, but you know, so that game would be tonight then if I'm speaking in the future. Yeah, I think we'll probably see Miami win that game. But if you look at it, they're down 2-1 so far through 3 games. Miami's lost these 2 games, game 1 and game 3, by a combined 34 points. That's you know, they got blown out twice. And granted, I'll concede that game 1 was close until LeBron went out. We don't know what kind of impact LeBron would have had, though, because if Game 3 has taught us anything, it's that Miami is susceptible to getting ran out of the gym by San Antonio with LeBron on the floor. So we don't know that they wouldn't have run him off the floor in San Antonio in Game 1 anyway. So they lost by 15 there. They lost by like 19 last night. So we're talking, you know, 34 points in 2 games. Meanwhile, Miami won 1 game, and in the Game 2 that they won, they only won it by 2 points. So that should tell you a little something right now. The other thing I wanted to touch on was Dwayne Wade. And we're going to touch on Bosh, too. We're going to touch on everything, man. I mean, D-Wade, we talked about it at the beginning of the playoffs on the site. our pre-playoff prediction piece. I'm talking about on the podcast. And that was just, I don't know what that was. But anyway, focus. Stay focused, y'all. Dwayne Wade, I felt like he was going to be a key part of what the Heat did as far as returning to the championship and winning it this time yet again for the third in a row, because we've seen the steady decline of Dwayne Wade over the course of the years, and we've seen LeBron take the reins. Either Wade gave it up, as some people think, or like my cousin Vince said on a podcast a couple of weeks ago, LeBron took the reins and you know, Bogarted the reins from D. Wade and said, get out of here, this is my squad now. Whatever the case, however you want to view it, Wade no longer is in control. Wade sat out a third of the season this year, right? Something like that. And it was all in preparation for the playoffs and gearing up to this point. Well, game one, Dwayne Wade had 19 points and 3 rebounds. Game two, he had 14 points and 7 rebounds. Game three, he had 22 points, 4 rebounds. Let's get a little deeper here into the statistics as I pull up his player page online. This is exciting podcasting right here. So, his last 5 games, 2 against Indiana, 3 against San Antonio, Dwayne Wade is averaging 17.2 points per game. He's shooting the ball really well. And this kind of goes back into what he's done during the season. From a field goal percentage standpoint, he's shooting 52.3% over the course of those games. So he's making the shots that he's taking, but I still feel like maybe he doesn't know where to pick his spots because he knows that LeBron is in charge. But no matter whatever the case, they got to start scoring because Miami has not cracked 100 yet on San Antonio. We know the Spurs can crack 100 points. So they're going to need more offense. And Dwayne Wade is the guy, because we all know LeBron is doing his part. I said in the article before the playoffs, Dwayne Wade's got to get 30, like twice, you know what I'm saying? If they're going to win this series, he's got to hit the 30-point threshold. He hasn't done it at all in the playoffs. I think he got 28 once. That's the closest he came. Wade, you got to get 30 points, bruh. I mean, because if LeBron does his normal thing and then D. Wade hits 30 and Bosh, you know, he's in his 15 to 17 range, whatever, now we're talking like a typical Miami Heat type of game where it becomes pick your poison for the opposition. But San Antonio's just ripping and running and playing at a high pace, and they're moving the ball and they're moving bodies and they're shooting threes and everything seems to be going in, and they're getting open looks, you know, all the time. And so Miami's gonna have to keep up, because it looks like defensively they might not be able to hold down the Spurs 3 more times in order to win this series. So if they're gonna have to outscore them, I think Miami has the versatility to outscore a team like San Antonio. But they're going to need more production from Dwayne Wade. And Dwayne Wade, his 22 points yesterday was the most points he scored in his last 5. And he's shooting the ball well enough. So it's like, you know, get a little more aggressive, D-Wade. When LeBron comes out the game, and granted, he doesn't come out the game much, but when LeBron comes out the game, Dwayne Wade needs to be on the floor going to the rack, you know? And he needs to be shooting free throws. We talked about it on the podcast not too long ago. On the Cleveland Show edition a couple of weeks ago, we talked about Dwayne Wade in the 06 finals shooting 90-something free throws in 6 games. I mean, he shot 2 free throws in game 1. He shot 4 in game 2. He shot 8 in game 3. So he's trending in the right direction. But, I mean, he's got to get to the rack. He's got to get fouled. I think we'll see that in game 4. I think we'll see the Miami going back to the rim, because we saw LeBron and Wade both going to the rim quite a bit in game 2, and that's the game that they won. And they were fouling out Kawhi Leonard, who was out of his mind last night. LeBron fouled out Kawhi Leonard, or at least had him in foul trouble for the majority of the game. I think that'll be part of their game plan, is to try to get Kawhi out of there, because they get him out of there and there's nobody on the perimeter that can keep up. And then Chris Bosh, the only thing I'll say about him real quick is the fact that, you know, he had a game where he had, I think, 18 points in game 2, and they won. But he only had, like, 9 points yesterday or something like that, and they lost. And my thing is, you know, his scoring is going to fluctuate, because it's always been that way, because he's the third option. So when you're the third option, you can't bank on X amount of points per night, because, frankly, your points are going to fluctuate. But Chris Bosh, he was 18 points in each of the first 2 games, 9 points in game 3. And he's gonna have to rebound. I mean, you gotta contribute. LeBron can't do everything. You gotta find a way to contribute. If Bosh is gonna shoot all these three pointers and whatever, you know, I understand it from a floor spacing perspective, why he does that and why Spoelstra wants him to do that. And it's commendable that he's altered his game to a degree to now he can at least make a shot from out there. But he's running three-point line to three-point line. He's not impacting the game on the glass when he has three rebounds in each. He's got six combined rebounds the last two games, man. He's 6'11". Come on, man. Like, it's the finals. You gotta hit the glass. You gotta find a way to help your team. Kobe Bryant, a couple of years ago when it was Game 7 and the Lakers played the Celtics and Kobe was terrible. I think he was like 6-for-24 in that game. And he got bailed out by Ron Artest, and everybody remembers how great Kobe is, and all Kobe's got five rings, even though Kobe was trash in Game 7. I will always give Kobe credit because I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I think he had 17 rebounds in that game. 17 rebounds at the two-guard position. So he's finding a way to help his team win. And if you're another member of the Heat not named LeBron James, you have to find a way to help your team win, man. You got to do something. You got to find a way to do something. The Spurs are too good, man. Ultimately, I don't think it's going to matter. I had the Spurs before the season. I had the Spurs before the playoffs. I have the Spurs going into the finals. I think the Spurs have been the best team in the NBA all year long, and I think they're proving it right now. I still think Miami has a chance to win this series, and I think the Spurs are going to ultimately... I think it's going to go at least six games, but my prediction was still seven games, and I'll stand by it. But I just think the Spurs have too many weapons, man, ultimately. And it's probably not going to matter. So, we'll see. By the way, Kobe had 15 rebounds in that game. I just looked that up. 15 rebounds. He was 6-for-24 from the floor, but he shot a ton of free throws, so he was getting to the line. And he grabbed 15 rebounds from the two-guard spot in 45 minutes. I mean, you have to help your team in another way. And that's what the really great players do. The really great players, they're great at more than one thing. Basketball is so much more than just scoring, man. And people, a lot of times people just don't understand that. They don't understand the importance of defense, rebounding, ball movement, setting screens, hustle, all that stuff, man. I mean, there's just a lot to the game. There's a lot to the game. And you can impact your team's chances of winning in ways beyond just scoring. And so if you're these role guys from Miami and you're just out there running up and down the court not making any impact, you got to do something. You got to crash the boards. You got to take charges. You got to mix it up, man. Do something. You have to find a way. Championships on the line, right? They don't just give championships out. If they would, then everybody would have one. Hell, I'd have one.
Tony Stark makes you feel he's a cool exec with a heart of steel.
As Iron Man, all jets ablaze, he's light and slight with repulsor rays. Amazing armor,
yes, Iron Man.
A blazing bomber.
Iron Man, the armor-clad superhero of the free world, may be doomed to die. Yes, the life of America's most dramatic Avenger may well hinge upon a delicate sub-miniature component containing the strange secret which keeps his injured heart beating and enables him to live as Tony Stark, one of the nation's leading scientists, head of Tony Stark Industries, and as Iron Man.
Yeah, what's up, y'all? What's up? This is Ghostface, straight from Staten Island. You know, I don't really mean no harm, but it just happens, you know, when I step approach a motherfucking black nigga and trying to spit his darts, can't spit him. Check it out, though. Hey, yo, scientific, my hand kissing, robotic, listening, optimistic. You probably missed it. Watch me dolly dick and Scotty Waddy cop and tip me. Big microphone, hippie, hippie-kipsy, crispy chicken birds, fuck up a Stone Ritchie. Chop the O, sprinkle a little snow inside of Optimo. Swing the John McEnroe, rap rock and roll, tidy bow, gun hole pro. Starsky with the gum so, hit the rum slow, parole kids, then Rapunzel. Patone stizzy really high, the vivid laser I got. Jump in a Harley Rock, cross, I freak a lemon pie, I'm bout it, Lord forgive me, Miss Sally shouted. Tracy got shot in the face, my house was overcrowded. You fake cats, Python heard it first on how I shit it on your turf. Fat time, Cuban Link first show. Check out the rap kingpin. Summertime, fine jewelry dripping. Face of the box, I seen your air twitching as soon as I drove off. Cap Kane and me with three sortos. Give one a Ray. Let's season they broth. Lightning raw, fever heaters. Knock, need a Sheba for Heaver. Diva got rock from the receiver. Bleeder portfolio. Looking fancy in the pantry. My man got bigger dimes, son. Your shit is scampy. Base that. Throw it to your mouth. Don't waste that. See, go slamping in the throne with King Tut hat straight off. Yeah. Yeah. Just one time, niggas. Smack all y'all niggas. Niggerettes. Universal death threats. Yeah. This be the God body. Yeah, no doubt. Judge wise. Yo, spiced out Calvin coolers, lounging with seven duelers. The great event is a slick, licking with six Rugers. Rock those big boy Bilates out of Woodbridge. Porch for the biggest beer, seasoned giraffe fridge. Rotisserie ropes, hickory, cinnamon, scented glaze. Perfect the fine to within shell. Let's smoke, all hell to my hands. 50 thou praise, dirty nose with the nasal drip. Click, flipped on fam. Dancing with Blanche and them bitches, flicking deuce pitches. Kick down an ace of space, snatch Jack Riches. Oath of compulsive lies, flies with my name on it. Dick made the cover, now count how many veins on it. Scooby snack, Jurassic, plastic gas, booby trap. 10 years working for me, you wanna tap shit? Bong, bong, bong. The bell went wrong, wrong, wrong. Staple lands where the ambulance don't come. Yeah, you see what I mean? Shit, I mean, you motherfucking crybabies. Get in line, punk. You should be studying your odds instead of studying me. That's how you lost your first job, punk. Now get in line, but you get your little thick ass tossed up. Shit, I study on the Bruce Lee, nigga. He was on the fourth. I was on the third.
Me a honey dust spliff. Black men to cause continental drift. One whip of pound you gets my divine stiff. Brick rock, late night, hit the tick-tock on my clock. I used to run up and pick a crab lock, hit his stash, dip back to the lab, make a flip uptown. Woo-doop. Now we back on your ave. Incognito, fatal hokito blow. Pop a needle, dick a knock knee ho. Bust out a fetal, 9 inch long, strong. Bobby pop the bitch thong. Spit on her, then I banged on my chest like Khan King. Merciless Ming, point the killer beast sting. Wing things, right through your head, bing. Snap the wing off of bats. My battle axe, tongue hacks, tracks. Once the ball drop, I'ma snatch 10 jacks. Pass a crack to a niggerette. Puff a loose leaf cigarette while your man searches the internet for Bob Digitech. It's stereo, crazy ass Shapiro. Multiply myself 10 times, stand the next to zero. And snap my fingers like the Fonz. And bag me a golden bronze skin girl with the honey blonde. Dip hair, make a nigga flip in his chair. Had the armpit saved off perfect with the nail. Stomach fat as a pancake for a man's sake. Used to fuck her when she ministrate, but it made her hyperventilate. Brooklyn!
Back on the preseason podcast of the year. Little Ghostface Killer, little RZA, little Wu-Tang Clan, you know what I'm saying? On a Wednesday, Wu Wednesdays. Hashtag Wu Wednesdays, that's the new thing. I'm starting it right now on Instagram. Even though I don't even Instagram. I have an Instagram. I choose not to Instagram. I don't post photos on Instagram. That's not my thing. I just sit back and watch the circus, you know what I'm saying? You know what's crazy right now? Is I really want to do a hip-hop segment right now. And I got a couple things, you know what I'm saying, in the holster that I'm hanging on to. But I really want to do a segment right now just about what's happening in the industry, what's happening in the game, whatever. And it's really not a lot going on right now, man. I mean, and that disappoints me greatly. And that was kind of the subject of the article from last week. I mean, right now, I guess the preeminent story that's dominating the hip-hop world right now is the 50 Cent Slow Bucks situation. You know what I'm saying? Where dude, Slow Bucks, it's difficult to even get a straight answer on whether or not Slow Bucks is actually one guy or two guys. You know what I'm saying? But one of them dudes got jacked on stage at Summer Jam. And there's video of it. It was about 50 Cent was on stage and with Fabulous, and they were performing, and I guess dude was on stage and he got, you know what I'm saying? The boys came to get him, and he had it coming because him and 50 had some beef. They had fell out some time ago, and he had been talking reckless on a social media tip, and 50 Cent, we don't know that 50 Cent had anything to do with it, so let's just say it's alleged at this point. Let me just get that out in the atmosphere, you know what I'm saying? But But it looked a little suspect, though, to say the least. But, like, this is what we're talking about. It's some clothing designer getting his chain snatched at Summer Jam. Like, that's, like, the headline right now. I don't really care. I can't, like, I tried to follow the story. Like, I tried to follow the Slow Bucks 50 saga and tried to get some type of understanding as to how many guys was Slow Bucks and what happened and how their relationship deteriorated to the point where this dude's chain gets snatched and he gets robbed in front of 50,000 people in the middle of MetLife Stadium on stage with a bunch of lights on him. You know what I'm saying? How does this happen? I don't even know. But it got to the point where even though I had tried to make myself care about this story, I just couldn't do it anymore. And the irony of it is this is right as 50 Cent is putting out another album. Right? And everything that 50 does at this point, at least to my opinion, and I think the opinion of many others, everything that 50 does to this point appears to be premeditated. Everything that he does, every move he makes seems to be calculated. And 50's a smart dude, you know what I mean? He didn't get where he is being a dummy, but it seems like he's almost too smart for his own good. Every move he makes seems to have the residue of 50 on it. You know what I'm saying? Like his fingerprints are somewhere he's behind the scenes pulling the strings, you know? I mean, I don't know that that's true, but it just appears that way. And with 50, he came out with Animal Ambition last week. I haven't gotten a chance to hear it yet. So if y'all have heard it, you know, holler at me, tweet at me at HHS Report. And let me know how Animal Ambition was, what it sounded like. I haven't gotten a chance to listen to it yet. I've been pretty wrapped up in some other stuff. But I plan on giving it a few spins. It sold 47,000 units, man. And what's funny about that is, remember back when 50 and Kanye dropped albums on the same day? And they were like mano y mano. And Kanye crushed 50, but 50 still sold like 600,000 units that week or something like that, you know? And that was just like 6 years ago, 7 years ago, maybe something like that at the most. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that was going down. Here we are now, 50's putting out albums and he sold 47,000 units the first week. And that actually exceeded some of the earlier projections from the week where people thought he was going to only move between 30 and 35,000. Like, what kind of times are we in, y'all? People can't even sell 50,000 records. 50 Cent can't sell 50,000 records, you know? And 50's is so interesting, man, because he left the whole situation that he was on with Interscope, and then he started his own little thing, and he's putting out his own work now. He had a little incident with Steve Stout a while back. He makes back up with G-Unit at Summer Jam, which is another headline from Hot 97's concert show at the beginning of June. And now we're seeing Young Buck, Lloyd Banks, Yayo, they're all back on stage together. They're dropping records together. There's talk of a G-Unit album coming in the fall. Doesn't this all reek of a premeditated 50 move? Like 50 orchestrated the whole G-Unit reunion? And G-Unit had some bangers, man. They really did back in the day. But, you know, it seemed like the time was over, and like Buck was locked up, Yayo and 50 split, Lloyd Banks was kind of went AWOL, and you know the group just kind of disintegrated, you know what I'm saying? And then don't even get me started on Game, you know what I mean? That's a whole other story. But the group just kind of ended up disintegrating before our eyes, and we see 50 is trying to launch his own label now, or trying to start his own thing independent from the big companies. And just now he comes back and he makes up with everybody. Now he wants to be everybody's friend and get people's talking, get the streets talking. You know, I think he probably observed the clamoring for a Dipset reunion that's been going on for years and years and years, and everybody's waiting on Dipset to get back together and to drop an album. Well, I think he probably sat back and just observed the landscape of things and was like, you know what, the streets are gonna be talking if I try to bring G-Unit back together. And so he made his calls, he did his thing. I mean, and what are any of those other guys doing that now that's better than what they were doing when they was riding with 50? I mean, but you want to hear a Yayo record? You want to hear Yayo solo? Is that what you want to check for? You want to check for that new Tony Yayo hit record? You know what I'm saying? Lloyd Banks, I mean, I think Lloyd Banks can rap sometimes, but I mean, what were these guys doing? Buck didn't even have his freedom, you know what I'm saying? So these guys were ass out without 50 Cent, basically. And so now they don't have nothing else better to do. So yeah, let's all get back on the GU and the train and let's try to move some records now. So I mean, and I I'm not really knocking it. It's more so just an observation that 50 Cent's a pretty arrogant guy when he wants to be, or so he appears. And when things are going gravy and he's in command, you know, he's quick to tell everybody else, he's quick to put other people in their place and tell them, like, yeah, they didn't do this without me. I put them in a position to do X, Y, and Z, that kind of thing. And now 50's trying to launch his own thing, and now he's calling everybody back. I don't know. Just like I said, just an observation. Maybe it'll work out, man. Again, I have not heard Animal Ambition yet. I'll give it a listen, man. Let me know if it's dope. I like 50's verse on the Cuffin' Season remix with Fab. I actually did dig that verse. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it wasn't great lyrically, but 50 was never great lyrically. That was never really his thing. But it was a solid 50 Cent verse. You know what I'm saying? And if you're a fan of that, then you'll probably like the Cuffin' Season remix that he did with Loso. And maybe you'll like Animal Ambition. I don't really know. Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. We got a phone call during the podcast. Our guest that I called that didn't pick up, and then I edited out through the magic of podcasting. Our good friend Anthony Houston is back on the podcast. Anthony, how's it going?
What's going on?
Not a thing, man. Let me ask you something. If I were to ask you to project how many records you think 50 Cent sold in his first week, how much would you guess?
I would say 50 Cent sold records, question mark.
Yes, he did. He did sell records.
Who's buying 50 Cent records?
I don't know, man, but he sold more than zero.
Well, you know, a fool and his money are soon parted.
50 sold 47,000 records.
47,000? You know he bought at least 7,000.
Well, maybe, but I mean, I don't know. I think I couldn't help but notice, just obviously everybody knows that the record industry isn't what it used to be. And just as far as the sales and everything, and I was hearkening back to when Kanye and 50 dropped on the same day, and 50 got crushed by Kanye, but he still sold like 600,000 units or something like that. And now he's like scrambling to move 47,000, you know what I'm saying? It's just crazy. And I also think, I was just talking to the listeners out there about their G-Unit reunion and how it's just convenient that as 50 Cent is starting his own venture, that now everybody wants to come back to play with G-Unit. When he was doing his own thing, Banks, whatever, Buck, you know, this, yayo, that, he was clowning Young Buck, whatever. But now he's starting his own thing. Now everybody want to get back on the gravy train. Now he's inviting people to come back. Like, hey, you're not doing anything. Get on over here. You know, hey, I remember that guy. That's just what it seems like to me. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, that old gray mare, she ain't what she used to be. And you got to get in where you fit in. 50 trying to fit in anywhere. And, you know, he's a boxer who's taking too many shots to the face. And now he's got Parkinson's. And he's over the hill, whatever other analogies you want to put. But it's funny to me, so hey, more power to him. I ain't sell 47,000 records.
That's true. Although I'd buy your album if you put one out. I mean, I just think that it'd be like a comedy album they used to have, you know what I'm saying? They still do comedy albums? I don't know if they still do comedy albums, but if you did one, I'd buy it for sure. I wanted to get your thoughts on a few other things basketball related. And because that's what the people are talking about right now. And they're talking hoops in these tweets. You know what I'm saying? Tweets is watching and all that. They're watching the finals. Your thoughts on the NBA finals through three games?
I mean, they are who we thought they were. I mean, they're the Spurs and they're the Heat. Like, it's basketball at its finest. These guys could probably win, you know, the Olympics if they wanted to. And it is what it is. The only thing I don't understand is how anyone could see everything that's going on and decide and with straight face say that the NCAA is better than the NBA. That's what I get out of this. Other than that, it's everything I want and possibly slightly a little bit more.
You're taking shots at the NCAA right now?
Shots fired.
Why?
Because they're not as good. I'm sorry. you're a big Simpsons fan. I'm a Simpsons fan. There's a part where the Simpsons are watching soccer, and the American person is like, he kicks it to that guy. He kicks it to that guy. He kicks it to that guy again. And the Hispanic broadcast is like, he kicks it to that guy, and that guy kicks it to that guy, and that guy kicks it to that guy. Oh, my. And it's like, no, this is stupid. There's clearly a better thing to do. I don't care how much you hype it up. These kids can't shoot, and only about 20 of them are good.
Ladies and gentlemen, Anthony Houston just comes onto the podcast and takes pot shots at college kids. That's fantastic. I can't, you know. I mean, you're not wrong. I mean, they're definitely more talented people in the NBA usually, but man, I don't know. I mean, I enjoy both. I enjoy March Madness and I enjoy the NBA playoffs. But there's clearly a higher degree of difficulty right now. If this is superstar mode where we're watching between the Heat and the Spurs, then the NCAA is like, what's the next level up from rookie on 2K?
I don't even know. Starter?
Yeah, starter. That's at best, we're talking about starter on the NCAA. And speaking of college hoops, I want to get your thoughts on my team, the Cleveland Cavaliers. Always in the news. Yeah, it's funny because, like, you know, I'm a Cleveland guy, so I don't always want to, like, talk about Cleveland stuff necessarily. But the Cavaliers are always in the news for some reason, and like, so are the Browns all of a sudden. And, you know, it's always something. And so the latest thing is that we basically offered to make John Calipari Scrooge McDuck rich, and he turned down the wine and gold. You know, as far as college coaches go, Calipari's about as good as they get, although he does have a history in the NBA, and it was not a very good one. Do you think Calipari made the right decision to turn down the Cavaliers, and how much money would it cost for you to take a terrible job? Not saying that the Cavaliers coaching job is a terrible job, but like, if it were a job that you clearly did not want, you would do it for $80 million, right?
In a heartbeat. First things first, I mean, Calipari made the right decision. He can get all the money in the world from Kentucky. And, you know, there's no upside to leaving Kentucky. You don't have to deal with, you know, free agents and people that are making any kind of money for their services. You make all the money. They make no money. And then you tell them, hey, I can get you to the NBA. So Calipari can't leave that. That'd be stupid. If you're trying to get the guys who want to go to the NBA and they can't go because the rules are set up against them, if you can be the king of doing that, that means you're king forever. No one can do it better than him. So why bother?
But I think there is an upside to him leaving the NBA. For one, $80 million. That's the one upside to leaving the Kentucky Wildcats. I don't know if I said NBA before. That's the one upside to leaving the Kentucky Wildcats. The other upside is he doesn't have to deal with those yahoos down in Lexington. Isn't that where UK is? He doesn't have to deal with those people. Corey, we're talking about you. You know what I'm saying? He doesn't have to deal with those people because those fans, you know, they can be a little unbearable at times with these unrealistic expectations that you win the title every year or else. He don't have to deal with that in the NBA. The other thing is, he's conquered college basketball. The NBA is a new challenge, and he already was in the NBA once and sucked at it. So now he has an opportunity to right that wrong and rewrite the narrative of his career as not just a great college coach, but as a great basketball coach. I think that's the incentive for him. The problem with it, though, is that it really does appear to be an indictment on the Cavaliers organizationally. And that's the part that kind of hurts me. That cuts deep for me because they're backing up the Brinks truck at this guy's front door. And he said, no, you know what I'm saying? So what do we have to do? The Cavaliers have tried to get so many big name coaches. I mean, they've looked at Billy Donovan, Tom Izzo, Mike Krzyzewski, Larry Brown, Phil Jackson, John Calipari. They've tried to get everybody short of freaking Bear Bryant to coach the Cavs. You know what I'm saying? Like, they'll get anybody, you know? Like, anybody that's great, they might as well dig up Red Auerbach too. I mean, obviously, Bear Bryant coaches football. It doesn't matter. The Cavaliers are trying to get anybody to come in here and run the show, and nobody seems to want to do it. And that's the part that pains me the most. As far as, you know, and now they have this, you know, I mean, Calipari was going to be the president and the coach, hypothetically. So we're still searching for a coach. I think it sounds like Alvin Gentry is a front runner. Whoever they pick, I think in this particular scenario, they can't take a young guy. And they can't take a young, unproven coach because this point in the franchise history is too pivotal for them to gamble it away on a rookie coach or a first-time coach. They got to go with somebody with some experience, whether it's Lionel Hollins, Alvin Gentry. I still don't know what the status is with George Karl health-wise, but I would definitely be in favor of him coming back to Cleveland and coaching the Cavaliers once again. And then from the draft standpoint, which I think is even more important, I'm steadfast in my belief that Andrew Wiggins is the best player for the Cavaliers to select at the top of the draft. I don't see them trading this pick. And so if they don't trade the pick, and only keep in mind, there's rumors that Philly wants to move up to trade it. No, do not trade with the 76ers. You know, so we can get back, what, number 3 and number 10, so we'll have two more 19-year-olds on the team? That's a bad idea. Stay with the number 1 pick, right? Stay with the number 1 pick, draft Andrew Wiggins, who has all the potential of Joel Embiid and Jabari Parker, and he plays defense, which is something that Jabari doesn't do, and he's healthy, which is something Embiid might not be. He's got the highest upside with the least amount of risk. And to me, it's a no-brainer. I take Andrew Wiggins, number 1. From a coaching standpoint, organizational draft pick, what's your thoughts on the Cavaliers right now?
Everything goes back to screwing up the ill-gotten gains. Well, not the ill-gotten gains, the way too much gains, the way too much payback for LeBron, screwing up some draft picks. You can't get a coach because you can't screw up the draft pick. You don't know what you're doing with the draft pick because you screwed up all the other draft picks. I think it all goes back to that, quite honestly. I mean, like you said, you can't get an inexperienced young coach, which would be prime for a team with the top pick, a young, potentially budding superstar in Kyrie Irving. That's prime to just get a young coach in there, up-and-comer type person like they did like the guy from Boston. Do something like that. But like you said, you have the top pick 4 times or 5 times or however many times somehow Cleveland got the top pick. And now you need to win to make up for the fact that you've been losing and getting top picks for so long. Anything other than winning doesn't make any sense. So you can't get a guy who's got to learn some ropes, basically, and go from there. So yeah, you've got to get an experienced guy, but it's a matter of you're walking into a roster that may not be ready to win right now, but because of how it was put together, it needs to win right now. So it's a very difficult situation to walk into, and then you've got to pay that Cleveland premium, just like you do with free agency. You probably have to do it with coaches too.
My only rebuttal to what you just said would be the fact that last year's draft was terrible for everybody. So as bad as that draft pick was with Anthony Bennett, first of all, I'm not even out on him totally as a player. I think he has some potential still, and I would welcome him back on next year's Cavaliers roster. I think I'm not out on him totally, but I think that draft was so bad that pretty much anybody that we picked would have been a disappointment. So that's the first thing. We were in a no-win situation being number 1, basically. That's the first thing. Second thing is, Kyrie Irving is an all-star, has all NBA talent, and was an all-star MVP this last year. So I think we didn't screw up that pick. Deion Waiters is really good, and he's got that dog mentality that I personally love that the Cavaliers need, if you ask me. So if you have Kyrie and Deion, those are two really good players. They just don't know how to coexist. But if they can figure that out somehow, you got a pretty damn good backcourt. So really the only draft pick that was a top 10 pick that they really missed on was Tristan Thompson. And Tristan Thompson's not a terrible player. He's a serviceable rotation player. He's just not what you would think that you would be getting with a top 5 pick. That's really what it is. So, I mean, people like to criticize the team for these picks, and I don't think the picks have been as bad as they would appear. I think you have Tyler Zeller's not great. Sergei Karasev, the jury's still out on him. But taking those guys out of the equation, like I said, you're looking at Deion Waiters, Kyrie Irving. Those guys are great picks. You put Andrew Wiggins with that, or even Jabari Parker for that matter. And I mean, I think that's three really damn good ball players on a young team. But and in any case, it's just unfortunate for me as a fan of that organization and that team that, that they fall on hard times and that they can throw upwards of $80 million. You know, that's Larry Hughes money. They're throwing Larry Hughes money at our next coach. At a coach, you know what I'm saying? And we can't even reel him in. And speaking of coaches, let's talk about the New York Knicks. You wanted Derek Fisher, correct?
Yes, sir.
So tell us why Derek Fisher is going to turn around the New York Knicks. I'm dying to know. I don't know why. Tell me why. Convince me.
It's gonna piss off Corey, for one. And after that, it's a matter of you got to understand how terribly, horribly ran the Knicks are. I mean, the Knicks have now just, in the span of like 3 months or however long it's been, got a GM who's going to see eye to eye with the coach. We've got a GM president person who can basically get James Dolan to publicly admit he doesn't know anything about basketball, which is a huge sentiment, a huge statement, one of the biggest statements in New York Knicks history. James Dolan, I am not a basketball genius. So you got him potentially sitting down a little bit, taking a seat for once and shutting up somewhere. Go play guitar, Jimmy. Come back when it's time to, you know, win championships. So you got that going. You got the coach, and potentially you've got the superstar player who, if he re-signs, will know very quickly if Carmelo is down for the program. And one of the things we talked about offline is that the greatest thing in sports and the hardest thing to do is get a little understanding or synergy between owner, GM, coach, and star player. The Knicks are dangerously close to doing that. They may never win a championship, but that's the fundamental foursome of things you need to be a well-run franchise. And the idea that the New York Knicks could be well-run is like, I can't put words to it, isn't it? It almost is giving me a stroke thinking about it. So that's why I think that they are close to doing something positive over a long-term basis.
Well, couldn't you basically have said that about anybody that they hired, provided that they used to play for Phil Jackson? So, like, if the Knicks hired Mike Pemberthy as head coach, you know what I'm saying? Everything that you said would apply to Mike Pemberthy that apply to Derek Fisher. Why is Derek Fisher the right guy?
He's the right guy because, I mean, everybody in the league respects him. I mean, you got a guy who can talk to Kobe Bryant and Kobe Bryant will be listening to him. You got a guy who can help, you know, Kevin Durant start getting into his prime and do whatever big brother type things Fish does. Like, I mean, he was one of the voted a top guy to the union, and I know the NBA union is terrible, and maybe no one wanted the job, but he got it, and people like him for it. So there's got to be something to that, and he's well respected by the media, by the players, by fans who, you know, don't hate the Lakers. You know, I mean, so he's got that going for him. Luke Walton doesn't have all that, and whoever else, Rick Fox certainly doesn't have it. And so on and so forth. Like, he's got the gravitas to take the job and the smarts and the fact that he was a guy who was always a role player, he's got that going for him, too. So all that stuff together makes him the perfect guy to put in the work to turn this team around.
Did you want him over Steve Kerr? And do you think this will be enough to get Carmelo's mind right and to quell all these rumors that he's now about to link up with Miami, which if he does that, I might just stop watching basketball if Carmelo joins the Heat. But anyway.
I was going to say, I wasn't excited about Steve Kerr. He seemed like a coach, a guy who maybe could coach, whatever. It is what it is. Derek Fisher brings a little more excitement to it, especially since he's much closer to the game. Like Phil Jackson said, he still knows the players, stuff like that. I know that Kerr was a GM, and that's some great experience there, but there's a certain level of more oomph that Derek Fisher brings than Steve Kerr would. I don't think Steve Kerr can be necessarily a bad coach, but I don't think it would have been as good or as openly accepted by the roster and potentially by free agents in the future.
Well, the one thing I will point out is it sounds like you would have to imagine if they're going to be running a triangle in New York. And a triangle offense is a thing of beauty when it's ran correctly. I highly encourage anybody to go to YouTube and look up the triangle offense for the Lakers versus the Celtics in the 08 finals. There's like a 5 to 10 minute video of just plays that have developed out of the triangle. And there's just so many nuances and there's a play off of this play and there's a read off of this read. And if that read's not there, then you can backdoor this man. And there's just so much to the triangle that most people don't even really see. It's just happening before your eyes. It just unfolds and you don't even realize that it was there. It looks like Fisher's probably going to be running that offense, I would imagine, for Phil. I don't know that they have the pieces, though, in New York to run it successfully right now. I mean, who's going to initiate this offense? I mean, you have Melo. He's a gun. You have J.R. Smith. He's a gun. You have Raymond Felton, who was never known for his passing, and I don't even know if he'll be on the team next year. So I'm not really sure who the Knicks... Huh?
I was going to interrupt and say he's known for using a gun.
Yeah, there you go. He's known for using guns, carrying guns or whatever, and getting smacked up by his lady. Didn't that happen?
Hopefully.
Yeah, well, at any rate. I think when I look at the Knicks roster... And they have some decent players, but I'm not sure how these guys would fit into the triangle offense. I'm not even entirely sure what type of guys they would need to get. I mean, if you look at what Boris Diaw is doing in San Antonio, I feel like he would be a pretty nice fit in that offense. But in any case, the Knicks have quite a road ahead of them. Who was your pick for the finals before the series started? Did you have a pick?
I didn't really make a pick. I probably was going to go with the Spurs. I went with the Spurs last year, and that's another thing we talk about offline. It's hard for me to see the Spurs losing a lot of games in one series. Like, it's just hard for me to see it because they're so perfect. And while the Heat are, you know, close to perfect as well, they are more a more kind of I'm not sure who it is, either you or mutual friend Rob, who calls him the flying death machine. But if that's the case, you're moving around, your defensive rotations are hectic but somehow controlled, you know, insanity or whatever. They're almost like two opposite forces going together, and I just couldn't see the fact that the Spurs would not beat them just based on the fact that they played perfect basketball. I was wrong, but you know, last year they should have won in Game 6, but whatever. So I'm still taking them this year because they still play perfect basketball.
I think the Spurs are better. I think top to bottom, I think they're a better team. I think they have a better coach. I think they're deeper. And I think they have more good players than the Heat do. And I feel like, as great as LeBron James is, I feel like that maybe we should try to gauge who's going to win series like that. It's kind of the opposite of the Bill Simmons theory, which is often accurate, where he says, you know, a team with the best player wins the series 95% of the time. And that's true. But I also feel like maybe the team with like, it's like if somebody were to ask you, why do you think the Spurs are going to beat the Heat? Well, they have more good players than the Heat do. You know, I think that's a pretty valid reason. And I think that's what it's been looking like so far to this point. Now, one thing I like to do is I like to count backwards from the amount of games that are left in the series and then try to visualize that happening. Now, granted, the Spurs were up 2-1 last year and lost the series in 7 games. But Miami had Game 6 and Game 7 on their home floor, and they don't have that this year. They don't have Game 7 on their home floor, or Game 5, which could be pivotal. And when I look at this series now, Miami has to beat San Antonio 3 out of 4 games. Because we're 3 games into a 7-game series. There's 4 games left. Miami's got to win 3 of them. It's hard to see them beating San Antonio 3 out of 4. It really is. It's not impossible. They did it a year ago, but I'm just not seeing it. I'm not seeing it. You have any last words for the podcast before we sign off this evening?
At this point, I'm looking to see. I'm hoping that we get to see the Spurs win out, and I want to see Pop and Tim Duncan, you know, say they've had enough. And then I want to see what Diabolical Wade and the Heatles do in the offseason. I think that'll be interesting. I have no belief at all that LeBron and Bosh and Wade are going to be other than opt in. He might opt in, opt out, both. But I think that either way, the Knicks are going to be good, and that's what I really care about. So I guess that's it. Oh, and I have no belief that LeBron and Carmelo are going to team up anywhere ever except for in the Olympics. But that's it. Thanks for having me.
That's a pretty solid way to end the program, I think. I don't know if I see them teaming up either. But if they do, like I said, if they do, I'm just going to turn in my NBA fan card and just be like, you know what? Screw this noise. This is terrible. This is not good for the sport. Because it wouldn't be. But it would be interesting. I think Duncan and Pop will retire if they win. I agree with you. I think Duncan will retire for sure. And I don't know if Popovich will retire. I think maybe Popovich knows that his bread is butter by Tim Duncan, much like I feel Bill Belichick knows his bread is butter by Tom Brady. And that's why Bill Belichick has been prepping for Tom Brady's retirement for like the last 6 years. That's why he's always trading back to get these younger guys and not, you know, going ham in free agency and all this other stuff. I think that's why he's not going all in on Brady, because he knows he needs to prepare for life after Brady. It'll be interesting to see what San Antonio does if they win and Timmy retires. How are they going to replace him? How are the Spurs going to keep up this machine that they are without their centerpiece? I don't, you know, it'll be interesting to see whether or not Pop stays or goes. I don't know. But either way, I know I'm going to enjoy the last few games of the finals. You are too. Check out my man Anthony on Twitter at AK Houston. That's HUESTON. And his website, Houston Life Chronicles. Very dope site. Check that out as well. Hit up our website, hiphopsportsreport.com. And we're also, shout out to my man Cray Allred. I recently did a piece on the Sunday Old School podcast. Check out Sunday Old School on Twitter and check out their podcast. It's also available on iTunes. Once that podcast gets posted, I'll send that out to you guys also, so you can see, or should I say hear, my appearance on the Sunday Old School podcast. Thank you very much, Cray, for that. I really appreciate that, man. We'll have you on the podcast sometime in the near future as well. Check us out on iTunes and subscribe. Comment. We need some more comments. We need some more reviews of the podcast. What you like, what you don't like, preferably what you like. and that pretty much wraps it up, y'all. Preseason podcast of the year, signing off. Jay Hicks, we out here. Peace.
My restlessness is my nemesis. It's hard to really chill and sit still. Committed to page, I write around. Sometimes won't finish for days. Scrutinize my literature from the large to the miniature. I mathematically add, minister, subtract the wax, selector, will it back. I'm feeling that. From the core to the perimeter, black. You know the motto. Stay fluid, even in staccato. Most deaf. Full blooded, full throttle. Breathe deep inside the drum hollow. There's the hum, young man, where you from? Brooklyn number one. Native son, speaking in the native tongue. I got my eyes on tomorrow. While you still trying to find where it is, I'm on the ad where it lives and dies. Violently, silently, shine so vibrantly that I squint and catch a glimpse. Embrace the bass with my dark ink fingertips. Used to speak the king's English, but caught a rash on my lips. So now I chat just like this. Long range from the baseline. Swish. Move like an apparition. Go to the ground with ammunition. Move from the gate, voice cued on your tape, putting food on your plate. Many crews can relate. Who choosing your fate? Yo, we went from picking cotton to chain gang line shopping to bebopping to hip hopping. Blues people got the blue chip stock option. Invisible man got the whole world watching. Where you at? I'm high, low, east, west, all over your map. I'm getting big props with this thing called hip hop, where you can either get paid or get shot when your product gets stopped. The fair weather friends flock when your chop position dropped in the phone calls. Chill for a minute, let's see who else hot. Snatch a shelf spot, don't gas yourself out. The industry just a better built cell block, a long way from the shell tops and the bells that L rock, 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 rock. Prosecution.
evidence. An out of court settlement, ad space for liquor. Sick without benefits. Luxury tenements choking the skyline. It's low life getting treetop hot. Hit is a backwater remedy, bitter and tender memory, a class C felony facing the death penalty. Stimulant and sedative, original, repetitive, violently competitive, a school unaccredited. The break beat, you get broken with on time and inappropriate hip hop. Went from selling crack to smoking it. Medicine for loneliness, remind me of Thelonious and Dizzy. Bobbers the B-boys getting busy, the wartime snapshot. The working man's jackpot, a $2 snack box. So beneath the cracks, spot, Olympic sponsor of the Black Glock. Gold medalist in the back shot. From the sovereign state of the half-nots, where farmers have trouble with cash crops. It's all city like phase two. And I will simply amaze you, praise you, pay you. Do whatever you say, do, but Black, it can't save you.